Welcome to Methods, a podcast from the ESRC National Centre for Research Methods. In today's episode, we're asking if an exciting new research method using secondary analysis of large-scale qualitative data could also bring fresh ideas and impetus to the teaching of research methods. We're joined by Lynn Jamieson from the University of Edinburgh and Sarah Luthwaite from the University of Southampton. I started by asking Lynn about the potential benefits of the method to researchers.
Perhaps I should just start by explaining that by big qual, we mean the analysis of volumes of qualitative data that are much larger than the quantity that would be feasible for a solo researcher or even a small team using conventional qualitative techniques. We've been focusing on secondary analysis of archived social science qualitative research. And also maybe it's important to say that this is a bit more complicated than just scaling up an individual project to something bigger. Rather, we've been trying to look across a whole set of small-scale projects and creating opportunities for making a new data set that asks new questions of the data. So the advantages that you asked about, or the benefits, are the ability to scope out new research questions, questions that maybe couldn't be answered by individual small-scale studies, maybe the possibility of getting a comparison, using comparison in new ways, generating the possibility of stronger generalization, perhaps testing ideas against evidence. So when I speak about theoretical generalizations, I mean understandings about how social processes unfold. And of course, I don't mean statistical kinds of generalizations.
So clearly an exciting and innovative new method, but I wonder if it's really needed. What's the context here that's made you and colleagues want to develop this method, push it forward and get others to use it?
Well, part of the context is the growing volume of qualitative data. So the main funding body in the UK requires people to archive their qualitative data. So there's now a whole body of archived data that is searchable by metadata. So that offers the opportunity to conduct secondary data analysis across multiple data sets that wasn't there before to the same extent. But then the general backdrop, part of the general context of what's driving this, is excitement about big data, the notion of big data, which is blurring boundaries really between quantitative and qualitative, and is promising something new through using computational skills to very quickly analyze very large volumes of data. But we would argue that this form of analysis is often prioritizing quantitative knowledge and losing some of the skill and depth of the qualitative research. And so we are trying to bring together deep research approaches and the breadth that's offered by these kinds of so-called data mining. Although we would say it's not really mining because it's not providing the in-depth analysis of qualitative conventional techniques. And we're trying to bring those two together.
So hand in hand with the development of new and innovative research methods come the challenges of teaching that method to others. So Sarah, can you start by explaining some of the challenges that people like you face when thinking about teaching new methods, especially one that's as potentially quite complex and advanced as this appears to be?
Yes, well, I think there are several key challenges, some of which are common to advanced methods teaching and some of which are more specific to this precise method. So one of the challenges for teachers is in the development of teaching resources, particularly in terms of developing or finding worked examples, which can be used to demonstrate a method in use or demonstrate its rationale and function from beginning to end. So things like research papers and journal articles are really useful here, but as we know, the time frame for getting work published can be long, and that can pose a related challenge. So there can be a scarcity of examples. And that's really where teachers of methods are then drawing on their own experience of using the method. Another resource challenge is related to the community that teachers can draw upon, where you might share resources. And given the limited numbers of people who might be in a field or located maybe across disciplines, drawing that knowledge and kind of establishing some pedagogic resource to pull upon for a new method can be really challenging. So in these aspects, new methods, advanced methods, complex methods represent a significant teaching challenge. It might be necessary to, develop examples from scratch and use examples that come from related methods. So maybe recognizing that methodological innovation is based on increment and adaptation. So in this way, you might draw upon and repurpose resources from related methods as a way forward. Another key challenge is the diversity of learners. So Lynn's already mentioned that there's this blurring between qualitative and quantitative when using these advanced big data methods. And in this respect, there's a need to establish common ground with students, with learners. You need to understand their level, their background, their motivation, and establishing this maybe prior to teaching or during teaching can be really important. So you've got that common ground to work from. When it comes to teaching doctoral researchers and others, for example, in our own teaching, we've had students coming from a range of disciplines, from linguistics, who might have sophisticated knowledge of text mining techniques, others who've been working with social media data and internet archives, and others who may come from exclusively more traditionally qualitative backgrounds or exclusively quantitative backgrounds. So establishing an interdisciplinary or methodological common ground to work from in class is really important, as is knowing when teaching was more tailored to particular groups. So collaborative learning and student-centered approaches can come to the fore in this kind of situation. And they also, I should say that the diversity of learners can also be a strength. You've got the opportunity to draw on the expertise in the room. And I think that's something we see a lot, particularly in advanced methods teaching, where the expertise of the class as well as the teacher become really important.
Yes, a lot to consider, but nevertheless, you and colleagues remain very excited by the potential of this method. Why?
I think Lynn's already introduced some of the key concepts around big data, why it represents quite a contentious subject in the social sciences as a kind of new material that social researchers should be engaging with. And I think there's a feeling amongst some researchers I know working in this field that qualitative methods really need to be represented in the space. From my perspective, as somebody interested in researching the teaching of methods, I think it's really important that researchers are engaging this space, but also cascading their knowledge. So we're building the capacity in the UK for qualitative methodologists to engage this space.
So discussions about how to teach this method are still very much in their early stages. Lynn, what are your thoughts on the things that will be important in making a success of that?
Teachers, I think, are typically more confident teachers and keener to teach methods that they themselves use. Practices of using qualitative secondary analysis to address new research questions in this way, bringing together data sets, is relatively underdeveloped still. That sets up quite a challenge, I think. Alongside that, giving students examples using existing qualitative data is fairly common practice among teachers when they're trying to help students learn about practices of analysing qualitative data. So I think teachers are used to some use of secondary analysis, maybe using their own data, giving that to students. But our challenge is to inspire new uses of Big Qual, what we are calling Big Qual, of bringing together data sets that are qualitative and combining this breadth and depth method. We've got to try and inspire that as a practice, as well as getting people to think about how to teach it in order to succeed, I think. So it is a bit of a challenge.
Now, in an earlier podcast episode, we talked about how the team developing the method were using an archaeological or breadth and depth method to dig deep into the data. And this seems to have been well received. So, Sarah, I wonder if that same metaphor somehow can be incorporated into its teaching, and if so, how?
Metaphors are really important to methods teaching. In our research on the Pedagogy of Methodological Learning project, we found both visual and verbal metaphors are essential for conveying complex concepts and processes in clear and lucid ways. These really help students connect with a method before maybe more active or experiential learning is undertaken. So for breadth and depth method, Lynn and her team have developed this archaeological metaphor based on four steps that articulate the approach to secondary data at scale. So step one involves an overview survey of the data, similar to an aerial survey that you would see in archaeology. And this is where the researchers construct a data assemblage. Step two concerns surveying the landscape of the data assemblage to identify sites in which to conduct preliminary deeper excavations or investigations. Step three concerns what could be called test pit analysis, that is, sampling for further preliminary examination. And this is likened to digging shallow test pits in archaeology, where digging is only deep enough to see which features of interest are worth investigating further. And then lastly, step four is the in-depth analysis, much more like a deep excavation conducted by field archaeologists. So Susie Weller talks about this in detail in the first podcast in this series. So the origin of the archaeological metaphor is quite interesting because I think it initially came out of Lynn and the team trying to communicate the research and the method effectively, first amongst themselves, then research papers and so forth. And then in the teaching, it's offered a really useful metaphorical frame that helps students understand the method as a whole, as opposed to interconnected methods. It gives a really vivid frame of reference. And it also builds on some established metaphors from text mining and so forth, where we might talk about digging in the data. So there's a sense in which this is building on a familiar metaphor and then extending it in a really useful way. Of course, there are challenges in using metaphor. They can occlude maybe some complexity. You need to handle them whilst also maintaining that suggestion of nuance. There's also cultural relativity. If you're using a metaphor, you've got to make sure it's going to work for everybody in your class. And also, of course, there can be some ideologies or more conceptual undertones to metaphors which need to be unpacked. The use of a metaphor is always something that's kind of a work in progress and under review, as with a lot of methods teaching. I think a lot of methods teachers understand that methods teaching is dynamic. And so you're reworking and thinking about the method and the teaching of the method at the same time.
So just to finish then, a question for both of you. I wonder if you think that this could be a positive development for research methods teaching, something which is notoriously challenging for both students and teachers.
I think, as I've maybe suggested, many methods teachers, well, they try to provide students with ways of learning, often by doing. And the time constraints in courses that are trying to cover the whole research process often result in more emphasis on collecting data than analysing it. Mm. But using secondary analysis of data helps students, I think, get doing experience of analysing. This particular method is also giving people experience of mixed method. It's moving back and forward between a more quantitative emphasis, in a sense, through the breadth method of using some computational techniques and the conventional depth. It means really that it's probably more suited to more advanced teaching, so it's probably more suited to postgraduate level than an undergraduate level. But I think its use could help actually sharpen a whole set of skills and also help teachers reflect on some aspects of their methods teaching in helpful ways.
Well, I would certainly second what Lynn says about the teaching of analysis. And I think there is a trend we sort of see in some methodological textbooks about starting with analysis, which I think is a really interesting stream of thought. In terms of teaching, again, I think this interface between teaching and very novel methods and big qual methods raises important questions for us in terms of research capacity and how new advanced methods can be scaled effectively through teaching. I think we recognise that there are familiar challenges in terms of learner diversity, the constraints of short course teaching, short courses being the most frequent mode for skills development in this kind of sphere. But the work also helps shine a light on other challenges, particularly the interface between quantitative and qualitative methods and how teachers articulate approaches to the qualitative imagination and the differentiated use of quantitative tools and approaches. When we've had discussions with teachers of methods, that's been a really rich space for developing understanding and insight into what we do as teachers and researchers. So really there's this need, I think, for building, if at all possible, a kind of pedagogical culture in methods teaching. This is like the networks and opportunities for people to come together, discuss and debate what we're doing with our teaching, sharing resources and so on. And that's really necessary for, I think, development of effective and robust methods teaching more generally, but particularly useful for innovative methods.
That I personally have definitely gained from working with Sarah and her colleagues, who are able to get me to think more pedagogically. And that's definitely been to my benefit. So I hope we'll be able to take that, you know, to other people.
Lynn Jamieson and Sarah Luthwaite were talking to Christine Garrington about their NCRM project, Big Qual Analysis, Innovation in Method and Pedagogy. More details can be found on the NCRM website under the Research tab. Susie Weller's podcast episode, Digging Deep, the Archaeological Metaphor, Helping Researchers Get into Big Qual, can be found under the audio podcasts section. In a follow-up episode, we'll be discussing the potential benefits and challenges of teaching Big Qual for teachers and students.